Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup.
It has been a turbulent decade here in Vancouver, to say the least.
Check me out, y'all.
Halford and Brough.
In your area.
That's right.
About to cause mass hysteria.
Sportsnet 650.
Hughes, a drop. He scores.
I've never seen a young defenseman like Quinn Hughes.
It's halftime.
Horvat with two. Horvat with three. Patrick.
Lucas. And the cover.
It was halftime.
Now Besser off the drift one. Accepted by Patterson. He scores.
Playoff atmosphere. Look at the boys go. Crank it up. Let's go.
7:03 on a Thursday. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email them at sales@ableauctions.ca. We are also brought to you by the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better: North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. Let's go straight to the phone lines. Joining us now, as he does every week on this program, our good buddy from ESPN, Greg Wyshynski. What up, Wish?
Hello, everybody. I'm very excited that the U.S. is starting to win golds. We were winning a lot of silvers. Usually when that happens, there's a Canadian on skates somewhere in the vicinity. But we're doing good now. Everything's turning around.
I'm not going to take the bait. We were talking about this earlier, and we have negative texts into the program. We said, you know what? We're just going to ignore it. We're not going to take the bait. I will not take your bait, Wyshynski. I want to talk specifically about what happened yesterday. I want to move right to free agency. Now, there was a lot of different things. I was almost going to start with Dougie Hamilton and your New Jersey Devils, but I want to put that on the back burner for a sec because the Tony DeAngelo situation and press conference. This is what you wrote this. Tony DeAngelo did not support the January 6th U.S. Capitol insurrection. He says NHL team owners wouldn't allow their GMs to sign him, and he'll change the mind of angry Carolina Hurricanes fans, saying, quote, "They're going to like me." Details from a totally normal press conference. Can you please walk us through? I didn't get a chance to jump on it. I only saw it in the aftermath. But you were on, and you asked about January 6th specifically. So walk the listeners through what this thing was like.
Was Tucker Carlson also on this call? Or
well, I asked him about it because there had been an article written on Yahoo about his support of former President Trump and the questioning of the election results, which is something he was actively doing on Twitter until he deactivated.
Correct.
You know, and it's not as if he was cheerleading January 6th or anything like that, but there was an article written about him, and there had been a pattern of behavior that would indicate that he didn't quite agree with the election results and perhaps thought they were fraudulent, which, I don't know if you guys heard, was sort of the catalyst for a bunch of armed militants attacking our Capitol.
I have heard that. Hmm.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting timeline. So
you guys are fun neighbors.
Aren't we, though?
Yeah.
Maybe you guys need the wall. Holy smokes. So I asked him. I said, you know, because I wanted to know. Like, he's gone on the record about not being a COVID denier, but merely saying the media created hype about COVID so Trump would lose the election. There's some nuance. So I wanted to find out about this January 6th thing, and he put it on the record. He clarified, I'm not, you know, in favor of the insurrection. He says that, you know, nobody in their right mind would be in favor of the insurrection, which, you know, lends to other questions. But, it was something that he hadn't addressed, and I felt he should address it, and I'm glad he did. And I'm also glad that everybody else held his feet to the fire on the number of off-ice incidents that have led to him being such a controversial and divisive figure, where he gets signed to a one-year, $1 million contract, and there's a revolt amongst the fan base. So, and, you know, the most interesting thing he said, by the way, and I think it might have been in that teaser that you read, was the notion that, you know, there were coaches and GMs, you know, hockey men, who wanted to sign him and wanted to bring him on, because he is a very talented offensive defenseman, and those don't grow on trees, especially ones you can get for $1 million because their, you know, stock is that low. But he said there were team owners that said, nah, it's not worth the trouble. We're not doing this. It's going to cause a firestorm. People are going to cancel their season tickets, which is what's happening in Carolina. And then yet Tom Dundon apparently talked to the guy, signed off on the signing, and here he is in Carolina. So as everybody's pointing out this morning, folks, These are corporations. These are not your friends. And the Carolina Hurricanes became a milkshake duck overnight.
And yet the Montreal Canadiens were forced to essentially apologize and admit they made a mistake by drafting Logan Mailloux. It got to the point where even the Prime Minister spoke out against that that signing. And Halford and I were Halford and I were talking yesterday, and we were trying to decide whether the Habs knew that that decision was going to create a firestorm, and they were just like, we can wait it out because there will be another thing, you know, next week or whatever. And people were free. Yeah, the Hurricanes will sign some guy and whatever. We'll be out of it. But what do you think that? What do you think is that the strategy of a lot of these teams when they make these decisions, or are they maybe not clued in to how opinionated some people are against these players?
No, I think they take a it's a risk assessment, right? Like, I think in the Carolina Hurricanes case, they probably think it's a small portion of the audience that's very online that's angry about this. And, you know, once he has 10 points in his first 17 games and he's only costing them $1 million and they lost Dougie Hamilton, then everybody will have forgotten about it by November. Like, that's kind of their risk-reward calculation here. And in Montreal's case, I'm sure it's a situation where they felt there'd be a backlash. They knew there'd be a backlash. That's why, you know, half the teams in the league weren't going to draft them, but they also knew the teams would draft them. So I think that they felt there maybe was cover for that. And then they also probably felt that, you know, the risk of it would be a lot of backlash online, a lot of backlash on Friday night with the kid out in front of the camera. He says the thing. They probably didn't think that the Prime Minister would be speaking about it, or that sponsors would start threatening to drop out. Like, that's probably not what they thought. And then that's when you get Jeff Molson involved. But I'll point out in both of these cases, both of these latest cases of the NHL valuing talent over morality and caring more about, you know, their cap space than the feelings of a victim, which is a constant theme in this league for 30 years, is, you know, there are no repercussions for these actions. Like, they're both on the team. They're, you know, Mayu's in the system. They're going to help him through this. And D'Angelo's, you know, going to maybe be in their starting lineup. So it's like, you know, you could say whatever you want about concern about your audience and what have you. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you are sticking with your hockey decisions.
Okay, Wish, I put Halford on the spot earlier in the day. Most regrettable contract, make your prediction.
For the record, I said Zach Hyman first, and then I went back and said no Blake Coleman.
Well, Blake Coleman's an obvious one because, like, okay, so, you know, unless he's Patrick Marleau and can keep the speed thing going in perpetuity, like, by the time he gets to the end of that deal, he's going to lose a little bit off the wheels, and that's what he's really good at. Like, that's his thing, you know? And so I think there's a notion of, well, you know, how good is he going to be when he gets to the end of that contract? It's not a terrible contract. But I honestly don't understand Martin Jones going to the Flyers. I just don't. Like, I was in San Jose when he was there, and he was bad, and in multiple seasons. And the idea that you're going to bring him to a city where they devour goaltenders, and you're going to bring him to a city, by the way, where you're coming off a year where you're hoping that it's an anomaly for Carter Hart. They've just acquired – it's one of those deals where, like, a team does all this work to acquire veteran players and do all this stuff, and, like, we're pointed in the right direction. We got Ryan Ellis, and, you know, here we go, Cam Atkinson. And then they go and do this in goal, and you're just like, what are you doing? Like, did you not understand the nuance of the playoffs where you've got to make sure your back end is solidified? So I didn't like that one at all. I mean, I just didn't get it. I think there was like 50 goalies that changed teams yesterday, and they picked Martin Jones. I don't get it.
Speaking of crazy contracts, it's not a bad deal what New Jersey did with Dougie Hamilton. It's just, as you put out, the contract is a roller coaster to try and figure out. I know we don't have the time to get into the entirety of it, but $9 million per year over 7 years, so $63 million, but it gets a lot more complex than that. Do you have any idea what was going on here?
Yeah, and it's easy. I'll break it down for you real quick.
Okay.
So the majority of his money, or like a good portion of his money, is in the years in which escrow is at 6%. That's via the CBA last summer.
Okay.
So escrow gets fixed, he makes his most money then. Totally makes sense. You don't want escrow cutting into your money like when you're making the most.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that he's got a ton of money in signing bonuses due in, I think it's from like 2025 to 2027.
Yeah. He has a $10 million signing bonus in 2025, 26.
Okay, and so, you know, this is not the happiest thing to report, but that's lockout protection.
Right.
Because the CBA expires after 25, 26. So, it took him forever to figure out the nuances of this contract, and there was a lot going on behind the scenes from Dougie trying to figure out if he wanted to be in Jersey all the way through to what the structure of this contract is going to be, all the way through to the Devils, you know, not coming to the table immediately with a $9 million AAV. I mean, they had to get there. And so it took a while. It took 4 hours, which in free agent frenzy time might as well be 7 days based on what happened yesterday. And then they finally got there. But, yeah, that's the structure. Someone texted me yesterday and they're just like, this is going to be weird. And I'm like, oh, I'm interested in weird. And it wound up being really weird. But that's why. It's escrow related and lockout protection related.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Greg, obviously this is the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We spent a lot of time analyzing the work that Jim Benning did yesterday. There was a lot of it, to be sure. But we wanted to get everybody else's outside perspective, so we asked Merrick earlier. He gave it a thumbs up, thought Jim Benning did a very good job. Curious to get your thoughts on what Jim Benning did yesterday. There was a lot of contracts handed out.
Well, the Tucker Pullman contract sucks. Let's just be honest with that. You don't give 4 years to someone who's going to be in your bottom pairing because, quite frankly, it's kind of the defenseman version of giving Jay Beagle four years to be on your bottom line. I mean, it's just that's the same. It's the same energy. I agree that I think he did okay. And I think whenever you can open up enough money to, say, protect against an offer sheet, I mean, you're doing your work. You're doing well. What I keep coming back to about Jim Benning, I wrote about this morning. I got an article up with 10 takeaways from free agency on ESPN right now. The man is the Homer Simpson of National Hockey League general managers. I've never seen anybody make so many of his own unforced errors over and over again and then correct them and then make more of them and then correct those and then correct the other ones that just happened last summer. And then at the end of the day, things work out. It's like a Simpsons episode. It's just like stepping on rakes for like 23 minutes. And at the end of the episode, everybody's hugging on the couch. It's incredible. I've never seen this before by a general manager who you know, ships out three guys that shouldn't be, you know, had bad contracts for another guy that has a bad contract and buys out, Colpe and trades Schmidt. And at the end of the day, they might actually be better for it. It's completely wild.
Now I'm mad because it wasn't Homer that was stepping on the rakes.
No, I am. I know it was Sideshow Bob. I'm just saying that he makes these mistakes. Don't ruin it. It's a great analogy.
Look at the clip where he gets stuck in the tar pit.
Yeah.
And he tries. Yeah. He's like, now I'm going to pull my hand. What was it? I'll pull my legs out with my arms, and now I'll pull my arms out with my face.
They're both completely kind of submerged. Oddly, yeah. And, it's a great proxy.
No,
it's a great proxy.
The entirety of this offseason has been, the mantra was, we're going to be aggressive and we want to get back to the playoffs. So you had to undo all the mistakes that were done, and it became...
By the guy making the new move.
Exactly.
That's the word that drives you insane.
And the other great offshoot of this is that every move that's been made has to do so much with the one that's been made prior, because now there's the additional element of being all in, like they're pot committed to it. So when the Holtby buyout came around on Monday, both Bruff and I were on the air and we're like, well, they had to do this because now you're so committed to, I don't want to call it the bit, but you're so committed to the all-in bit that you have to buy out Holtby. And then after you buy out Holtby, you have to trade Nate Schmidt because you need that money available. So it became this thing, Bruff likes to call it the kicking the can down the road textbook, like they've written it at this point, but there is that element to it that all the current moves or the moves that are going to happen next are directly related to what's just happened because they have to correct so many mistakes.
Right. It's incredible, isn't it? It's absolutely my favorite bit from the weekend. I think it was in Drance's article on The Athletic about the Canucks, was that Nate Schmidt didn't want to go to Winnipeg. And then the Canucks came back and said, okay, then you're definitely going to be in Vancouver. And he's like, I'm totally going to go to Winnipeg now. what an indictment. Look, I think the Canucks did pretty well at the end of the day, but I also think that their defense is atrocious, and I did not expect that to be the case, say, like 2 years ago.
We're speaking to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Are we missing any other big takeaways from the opening day of free agency? The money spent, I went over it in the intro. I think it was 294 years of term and over $700 million shelled out. In this economy,
I think it's interesting, too, that the defense first players are really getting paid. And I just wonder if that says anything. I mean, you think about what Phil Deneau got in LA. Defensemen were really getting paid. And I hate to say it, but I wonder if the style of play in the Stanley Cup playoffs is leading to that. And if the NHL continues to let the games be called like they've been called in the playoffs, I wonder about the quality of the hockey that we're going to see.
Well, there's two things. So we just saw a team win back-to-back Stanley Cups with a checking line that can also score.
Yep.
And hopefully that's the copycat league aspect, is that they look at the Yanni Gord line and they say, okay, you know, we can get Phil Deneau and we can pay him a lot of money. And in fact, he's not making all that much more than Gord. And we can build a line that is going to be able to shut down people, but also score, and we're going to be very good for it. And if that's positive development from the Lightning winning two cups versus, say, we're going to fake an injury for our player for an entire season, then bring him back in game one, let's hope it's the checking line example that people take. Not to say that Kucherov was faking, by the way, just saying that other teams would do it because they're nefarious. The other thing that I found interesting, because in both the cases of the Deneau signing and the Dougie Hamilton signing, they reminded me of the Artemi Panarin signing. The LA Kings are kind of inching back towards contention. I mean, we've not really seen Bossio play, you know, any significant time in the NHL, or Turcotte, or a lot of these young players, so we don't really know what they have there yet. But they know, they're pretty sure they know what they have, and they're pretty sure that when they're going to contend, that they might not have the chance to sign a Phil Deneau-type player to that contract. And the Devils are really far away from contention. I mean, their skill guys that are coming through are very good, but they're very young. And so they might be at least 2 years away. And that's a generous, like, mm-hmm. prediction. But they know that when they get good, that there's probably not going to be a Dougie Hamilton-type player available for them in free agency. And it's the same thing the Rangers did. When the Rangers signed Panarin, they weren't good. They were like a 435 points percentage team or some such. They knew that they were in a rebuild. They weren't going to be good for a little bit, but they also knew that Artemi Panarin was not going to be available again.
Right.
And so I think this is an interesting trend for these teams that have been in a rebuild, is that we're not going to wait around until we're good to start making these moves to kind of push us over the hump. We're going to get the over the hump moves now and then hope that the kids are as good as we think they're going to be.
You know, I realize the one thing that we haven't talked about yet, maybe the biggest development from the last week and specifically in free agency, is the goaltending. So you've got the list in your piece here. I think I can run through really quick.
Do you think the Sabres finally got it right in goal, yeah. Greg?
Okay, so here's how it goes. It goes Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago, Philip Grubauer to Seattle, Frederik Anderson to Carolina, Antti Raanta to Carolina, Martin Jones to Philadelphia, Braden Holtby to Dallas, Laurent Boisois to Vegas, Jaroslav Halak to Vancouver, Peter Mrazek to Toronto, Carter Hutton to Arizona, which I totally missed, Brian Elliott to Tampa Bay, Jonathan Bernier to New Jersey, and it goes on and on and on. I don't remember, we always talk about the goalie carousel, but I don't remember a year where it spun like this and ended up with so many different guys in so many different seats.
Yeah, it was insane. And actually, like, when I wrote my column last night, the money, I think, was still not at $600 million total. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, three other goalies that signed overnight. Like, Aaron Dell is now on the Buffalo Sabres, by the way.
Sure is.
No.
Him and Craig Anderson together at last.
Well, the Craig Anderson thing, I'll get to the goalie thing in a second. But the Craig Anderson thing is the funniest thing that happened yesterday. The Washington Capitals, Brian McClellan, their GM, literally said last week, Craig Anderson's going to retire.
Yeah,
and now he's the starting goalie for the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, if you needed a bigger indictment of the state of the Buffalo Sabres, it's like, you know, it's like one step ahead of, like, hey, beer leaguer, we need somebody between the pipes tonight. So, like, the goalie thing I talked to Jim Nill, the GM of the Dallas Stars, about this last night. And the goalie thing, he thinks, is a product, one, of obviously some teams having specific needs that kind of comes up every summer, and you never know who needs what, and things happen. I mean, like, the Knights giving away Fleury because of their cap situation and yada, yada, yada. Like, these things happen. So that kind of juices the carousel a little bit. But he thought the Kraken were the reason. You know, you had three goalies taken in the expansion draft, but then you had the Kraken there to take Grubauer when he couldn't come to terms with Colorado. They didn't know he was going to be available, and then they sign him. And then that kind of sets everything else in motion as teams start to scramble and get their guys, and Colorado's left holding the bag, and then they, you know, make the Darcy Kuemper trade. So he seemed to think that the existence of the Kraken, on top of some interesting situational needs for teams, were the reason why we saw, you know, a good portion of that happening. But, you know, I think Carolina nuking their goaltending was certainly a harbinger of things to come. You think about Nedeljkovic ending up in Detroit, and then Anderson and Raanta ending up in Carolina, and then Mrazek ending up in Toronto. Like, that Carolina decision had a lot of ripple effects, I think, yesterday as well.
Well, the Grubauer one, too, because Grubauer leaves Colorado. Colorado then turns around and makes the trade to acquire Darcy Kuemper. Everything kind of happened. I think it's settled down now, but I guess the big question of all of this is Fleury going to play next season in Chicago?
No, he's not. I don't think he's going to play in Chicago. His visceral reaction to playing in Chicago was pretty harsh.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to be able to convince him. But I think they acquired an asset, and they know that on top of, you know, hey, we hope that Fleury can play here, that they know he's an asset and he can maybe be flipped somewhere else if he decides that's what he wants to do. But, you know, the whole situation just stinks. I mean, I completely understand it from their business perspective, $7 million against the cap, unrestricted free agent next year. Mm-hmm. And frankly, like, they made their decision when Robin Lehner put pen to paper on a 5-year contract. That was basically Fleury's last day as a Knight. He just didn't know it yet. But the way that this whole thing came together was kind of oogie. And I you come back to Tom Dundon signing off on Tony D'Angelo, and the fact that this guy has been lauded as being Maverick owner, cool guy, you know, the internet's favorite team kind of stuff. Then you think about Bill Foley, you know, trying as much as he could to have plausible deniability about the way that Fleury was being treated by his team. And then he just kind of had to come out and lay his cards on the table and say, hey, you know, we had to do what we had to do. And that's the real Knights. You know,
yeah.
That's been the real Knights since the inaugural season. You can ask Nate Schmidt, you can ask Gerard Gallant, you can ask anybody. That's a team that got over its cute phase real quick. And it's now making a lot of concerted, targeted moves that end up kind of tarnishing the legacy of the franchise's most popular player.
I know that we're up against it for time, but with that Vegas thing, has that kind of permeated into the NHL with players and coaches, where guys might start, not necessarily stay away, but say, wait a minute, there's being cutthroat, and yes, this is a business, but this is something a little different, what's going on in Vegas? Because it doesn't seem like there's any loyalty for anybody at any time.
Yeah, no, I think guys are cognizant of which teams treat you right, and you can tell pretty much which teams sign guys and have a shot at guys where they want to play and where they feel comfortable. I still think that money talks. I think a cup talks, and I think there are a lot of guys in that team that can sell you on living in Vegas and being a good place where you're not going to be turned off by the way they treated Fleury. So, I don't think it's really impacted them. I think Vegas is going to remain a pretty popular destination for players, even though, you know, obviously word is out. But again, like, the other thing about the boys is that a lot of them never think it's going to be them. You
right.
know, a lot of them think it's a unique situation to a certain guy. And you know, that's usually the mindset until it becomes you. You know, so,
and then it's you, and then you go to Vancouver, and then all of a sudden, wait a minute, am I in Winnipeg?
Yeah, then all of a sudden you're calling Bryzgalov and being like, do they really not have parks? I might have to go there.
Wish, you're the best, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week. We'll talk again next week.
Take care.
Thanks. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So Jordan from The Ridge texts in during Wish's interview and says, how can anyone say the Canucks defense is atrocious? They haven't even played a game together yet. I replied to him, sports talk radio will be pretty boring without predictions. We're just talking about this Canucks defense and whether or not it's good enough. You know, this is what we talked about for basically a week leading into free agency. And we said that the Canucks need change. They need to get better. But I think the jury is very much still out on whether the Canucks defense is improved. We'll play some Jim Benning audio on the other side. Any texts, opinions, comments, text them into 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Let's really break down this new look Canucks defense, because I think it is the number one potential weak spot right now in Vancouver. I think people are very happy with what the Canucks forward group looks like. They're generally pretty happy with the goaltending, Thatcher Demko and Jaro Halak. Like, you never know with goaltending, it's unpredictable, but on paper, you're feeling pretty comfortable with the forwards and the goaltending. The defense, this is the big wild card for me. It is the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
.733 on a Thursday, Halford and Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. We are also brought to you by Able Auctions. If you're closing your business and you're not sure what all your assets are worth, let Able Auctions help. They've been helping BC business owners wind down and sell their business assets in an orderly manner for over 30 years. Whether it's a complete manufacturing plant, a restaurant, or a mechanical shop, Able Auctions has seen it and done it all. Email sales@ableauctions.ca and get your free of charge confidential consultation scheduled today. That's sales@ableauctions.ca.
So we talked a lot leading into free agency about how difficult it was going to be for the Canucks to fix their defense and that maybe there was no magic bullet out there. And I think after yesterday and after the signings, I don't think there was a magic bullet out there. I think the new additions to the Vancouver Canucks all come with major question marks on the back end. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, massive question mark. Could be good. If he returns to the form that he had a few years ago, I like the Canucks defense. Tucker Poolman, this guy hasn't played very much in the NHL, and because of the scarcity of right-shot defenders, Jim Benning had to give Tucker Poolman term. He gave him a 4-year deal, $10 million. And that was just the reality of the situation. Jim Benning wanted to sign defensemen, NHL defensemen, proven NHL defensemen that had played, that weren't just experiments. Like, maybe this guy will work. And what he ended up with are Travis Hamonic returning, Tucker Poolman, and Luke Shen, and a couple of depth guys on the right side. Mm-hmm. Here's Jim Benning on the market for right shot defensemen.
Well, it's even seems harder to find right shot defensemen these days. Like, you know, right shot D men, and even, you know, right shooting right wingers. Like, if you go through the teams, there's, for whatever reason, and I don't know why this happens, but, you know, to try to find right shot forwards right now, it seems tough. So, you know, we were happy to, we had Brock Besser as our only right shooting, you know, forward, and then getting Connor Garland in the trade that shoots right, and then re-signing Sutter, who's a right shot. Now we got, you know, some flexibility for Sutter on faceoffs and our own end for Travis, where, you know, he can, you know, put out a right shot center on faceoffs, and with Besser and Garland, right shooting players for the power play. So, and, you know, same with defense. It seems like for whatever reason now, it's hard to find, you know, right shooting defensemen. So that was something that we looked at, and we tried to add some guys today and over the course of the last couple weeks.
So I think, so a lot of people are texting in and saying, why are you guys being so negative?
No, they're saying, why are you being so negative?
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm a house of positivity guy.
Okay, because the most of the talk is usually about potential problem areas, right? So, like, we can go and have a whole segment on how much we like the forward group. I do like the forward group, but it's one of those things where you talk about the things that are potential problems. And I think if you look at the forward group, you like the forward group. If you look at the goaltending, yeah, sure. But the defense, I think if we had a poll question, which area of the Canucks are you most concerned about, forwards, defense, or goaltending, the defense would win in a landslide. So that's naturally what we're going to talk about. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this defense group does, because it's going to say so much about the decisions that were made.
Yep.
And also, I think it's going to be fascinating from a personal perspective with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. We're talking about a guy who was heralded as one of the best young defensemen in the game. There's a lot of people that thought he should have won Norris trophies earlier in his career. And yet he goes and he stays in Arizona. He signs long-term there and he kind of just languishes there. The team is a disaster. Maybe he lost some of his passion for the game. He also had an injury. He had knee surgery and now he's coming out of Arizona and he's come to Vancouver, where I don't know if you can find an opposite for Arizona as a hockey market, but I think Vancouver would probably be one of the candidates.
Sure.
And you're going to, and he's going to be expected to do big things. He is essentially, Oliver Ekman-Larsson is essentially the new Alex Edler. He's going to be the play in all situations, log a ton of minutes.
Yep.
And if that guy performs well, then you've got yourself a pretty good team because you've also got Quinn Hughes in there and the potential of Jack Rathbone. The right side of the defense just kind of has to hang on and provide support there. If, however, Ekman-Larsson continues to regress as a player, then you've got a problem. And this is why I can't wait to see these guys in the lineup. I can't wait for the first game of the season. We've seen how this lineup has come together, and Jim Benning has done a lot of work. He's made a lot of trades. He's made a lot of signings, and you've got a full lineup now. He said yesterday, like, this is when we get our RFA signed, like Hughes and Pettersson and Dickinson, and I largely expect that to happen. There might be a little stress along the way, but this is the roster, and we can look at it now and say, is this good enough to make the playoffs?
Right. There's not going to be a ton more action coming out of Vancouver. I kind of thought yesterday, looking at the big picture, that they might have tried to address the right side of the defense through a trade. Because there were some defensemen that were going yesterday. Now, not right-handed guys, but you saw Zadorov acquired for a third. You saw Nate Schmidt traded for a third for the second time. So I thought maybe there would be an avenue there. And I still do. I still think that there's some wiggle room where they could be open to moving a pick and get some more help because, quite honestly, they went into free agency and were a bit painted into a corner by their own needs and then what the market was giving right-handed defensemen. They had to pay Tucker Pullman $10 million and they had to give Travis Hamonic $6 million. That's, and I don't think that they were ever going to be the best solutions. But under the circumstances, they were what Vancouver could afford. And it was in the Hamonic case.
Because so many other teams were looking for it too, right?
Yeah. And it was defensemen across the board. I mean, Dmitry Kulikov still somehow signing for $2 million. Michael Delzato signed for $2 million.
Yeah.
Like, don't really get bogged down in the number on Pullman until you look around and see what the market was dictating yesterday.
Kyle and Chilliwack texts in, the most important improvement on defense has to come from Hughes. Your number one defenseman can't defend like a number five or a six. If he can make big strides with Brad Shaw here, it will make this group look way better. Here's a hot take. Brad Shaw is the new Ian Clark.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He has to fix everything.
That's his job. He's the defenseman whisperer.
Yeah. And I think just
God
overall,
bless him.
Look, Quinn Hughes defensively last year had some terrible moments. And I think what happened to the Canucks is they were a discouraged group. And at times they were just acting like human beings. They're like, ah, like their give a care meter was low at times, especially defensively. They also found themselves behind in a lot of games. So they were chasing the game a lot. They were chasing the game a ton. And sometimes when that happens, you try to do too much. And then all of a sudden you're like, I am way out of position here.
I want to take an early break here because I want to come back and discuss interesting remarks from Jim Benning about Abbotsford and the American Hockey League team being in your backyard. Because Jim actually acknowledged he didn't realize how profound it was going to be, the perceptions among players. And that's a really interesting thing because they had a lot of guys yesterday that were signed presumably to be on the farm, but to be jumping up at the ready should an NHL spot come available. So we'll play the audio of that, and we'll talk about that on the other side. It's your home of the Canucks. It's the Halford and Brough Show, Sportsnet 650.
Not having monthly fees means no monthly fee increases. Switch to a Simply Financial no-fee checking account and earn $200. Conditions apply. Visit simply.com.
Six 7:45 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Certainly more quiet this morning on day two of free agency than it was yesterday on day one of free agency. It was a fun show yesterday. A reminder that this show is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Three locations to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. My favorite's Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. I don't like to choose favorites among the children, but that one is my favorite. We are also brought to you by Able Auctions. If you have business assets to sell, email sales@ableauctions.ca. We just got a text in from Ben, the aspiring municipal worker. He writes, I was perplexed by Jim Benning saying he had no idea that there were so many advantages to having the farm team so close. I thought that was odd as well. Do we have the audio on this, Josh? Let's play now. So Benning addressing all the contracts that you saw yesterday, Jason. Obviously, there was, what, seven or eight, I would say, AHL-destined contracts. Mm-hmm. They may be of the one- or two-way variety, but those guys are probably going to end up in AHL Abbotsford. So Benning
their payroll for Abbotsford is going to be pretty high.
They spared no expense. They went after some guys that had played significant minutes in the NHL in that sort of 25, 26, 27, 28 age range. And Jim talked about it yesterday, and here's what he had to say.
Like, I didn't quite understand the importance of having your team so close as, you know, just to see what happened in the last, you know, couple weeks with, you know, players that, you know, want to come and, you know, like, it was like players from, you know, kids that grew up in BC that wanted to come home, play in BC, players that are from Western Canada that wanted to stay out west. And I've never quite seen it before. Like depth players, you know, when they'd signed with us before, you know, Utica was so far away from Vancouver that, you know, maybe we couldn't get the high-end depth players like we could. But, you know, having our team, you know, in the same vicinity, I think it really opened up a lot of players wanted to sign with us and, you know, want to be part of our organization and our group. So I think that's been a real positive. I'm really excited about, you know, the team that we're going to put together in Abbotsford this year. I think, you know, they're going to be a fun team to watch as, you know, we develop our young players down there and get them ready to play in the NHL.
Okay, so to answer Ben's question, you kind of have to interpret Benning ease, if you will. Like, he's not the most clear, straight-line communicator. He wasn't saying at the beginning of that clip that he didn't understand the advantages of having Utica move to Abbotsford. What he was saying was he didn't realize how many players were going to be enticed by this AHL franchise move, having the baby Canucks in the backyard. Because what you saw yesterday was that development play out in real time. There was a lot of interest from agents of these guys saying, we want our guy to be in Abbotsford / Vancouver.
Right.
And I think there's a multitude of reasons for that. One, they look at the roster.
Number two, Cactus Club.
Cactus Club. Huge opportunity to get there for happy hour between 2 and 5. There's an understanding here that I think especially on the defense, and not just because of how the defense is constructed, but because defensemen get hurt, right? It's an inevitability.
Blocking shots, especially the defensive defensemen, which they signed.
Yeah. I mean, and secondly, this is going to be a year in which guys are going to be taxed really physically. It's not a long offseason. You're going back to the full 82-game pull. You may have the Olympics in there, in which a lot of guys are going to be away. It's going to be a grind. It is absolutely going to be a grind. And the guy, like, I'm really intrigued by, like, I think, like, a guy like Nick Pétain, who's really always been on the cusp of being an NHLer but has never executed. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity there, and he gets to come back to BC. I talked about Brady Keeper earlier. I think if you can get a 25-year-old guy that might be, like, the sort of unpolished diamond where, you know, it's
he's going to be a fan favorite in Abbotsford, I think.
And then,
I think you need those types of players on the farm team for fan interest. Like, it goes beyond, oh, I'll go see the prospects for the Canucks. There are players that join these AHL teams that, even if they don't have the best shot of making it as an NHLer, mm-hmm. they're really loyal to
the team and they become fan favorites there?
Phil DiGiuseppe. Hey. I look at him, and then you look at his body of work in the NHL, and he played a lot last year for a New York Rangers team that was fighting for a playoff spot until the end of the season. I've seen some people pencil him in as this opening night for a fourth line winger on opening night.
The fourth liners have some competition. Zach MacEwen cannot assume that he's going to be into that lineup. They re-signed Justin Bailey too.
Right. And so you're looking at it and you're saying, is there an opportunity here for some of these guys? Yes. The other thing too, and keep this in mind because you're going to see it a ton this year, with a team that's pressed up against the cap, having your AHL team in your backyard is super advantageous because you can just paper transaction guys up and down. And there
are. Explain 100% how that all works.
Well, if you're up against. Yeah. Well, that.
I don't know.
If you need, like, the cap is, it's a daily basis thing.
Yeah, we
right?
need Drance on this to
you
explain
see,
this.
You've seen sometimes where an NHL team will go into a game that night with, like, 17 skaters or whatever. Like, they're only playing 9 forwards and 5 defensemen because the daily cap allotment has been hit. So, for example, for a guy like Mikey DiPietro, he doesn't make as much money as Yaroslav Halak. He's this lower cap hit. You will bring him up from the farm and bring him and move him back down just for a day, and you don't actually have to drive in from Abbotsford to be in Vancouver proper. Those are paper transactions, right? It was harder to do any of these sort of machinations with Utica because it's on the other side of the continent.
Yeah.
It's far, far away.
I'm actually not sure how all that works. We should next time we have Drance around, we should explain how that can work because I don't think you're the guy to explain it, and I don't think
But Drance actually brought it up on the program earlier, and he said, you know, when you look at the teams, and I think Toronto was a really good example of it, and San Jose, you know, when you're on those mailing lists for those NHL clubs and you get the daily email, like,
oh, San Jose would bring up guys every day.
Joachim Blichfeld has been called up from the Barracuda, and then 10 minutes later, Joachim Blichfeld has been sent back down to the Barracuda.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there going, like, they're never going to give this guy a chance. I want to just mention that Alex Edler going to the Kings story because I felt like this flew very much under the radar, and we haven't even mentioned it. This is arguably, the Canucks' best defenseman in franchise history, which says a few things.
Sure.
But I think he's a surefire bet for the Ring of Honor. And look, not to get all negative, but what does it say that Alex Edler stuck around so long? It's like some people are like, we can't get rid of this guy. Yeah. Why doesn't he want to go and play for a winner? And that it was all assumed that he would return to the Canucks this year just because he's Alex Edler. But after last season where Nate Schmidt apparently didn't enjoy himself very much, there was lots of speculation that and talk that there were quite a few unhappy campers in Vancouver. Even Alex Edler thought, you know what? I'm going to go explore free agency. And he goes and signs with the LA Kings.
I saw lots of that online. I saw lots of it. How bad did it get in Vancouver last year that a guy who spent 15 consecutive seasons here finally decided to leave in free agency? What I don't know is what the Canucks' interest level in bringing Alex Edler back was.
Right. What was their offer to him?
Yeah.
I think they did make an offer. And maybe he looked at that offer and was like, I'm going to explore free agency. But I do think that the message from the Edler camp was our intention is to go sign with another team. And I thought it was interesting that he chose the Kings because I look at the Kings and I think, it's a team that is probably going to be pretty good in a few years, but I don't know. I certainly wouldn't put them in the Stanley Cup contender.
No.
I think it was one of those things where Alex Edler thought, it's LA, the weather's good.
It's on the West Coast.
It's a good organization overall, and it's a quick flight back and forth for family reasons.
Sure. I think that's all totally plausible. I also do wonder how much film maybe Brad Shaw coming on board saw of the last couple of years of Alex Edler and said, here's a guy that is getting slower and slower with each year, and we need to maybe not rely on that as much. I also don't know what kind of role Edler would have had on a Vancouver blue line this year in light of all the moves that they made. Like, could you bring him back and slot him on the
not
third
when pair? when the Ekman-Larsson trade went down, I think that probably did. It was kind of for both groups. It was like, yeah, it's probably time. Because what are you gonna do? Are you gonna put Edler? Are you gonna have a left side of Hughes, Ekman-Larsson, and Edler? Well, what about Rathbone? What about Ulevi then? It just didn't fit. But I will say that Alex Edler took a lot of criticism in this market, but that guy was a warrior, like an absolute warrior. How many, you know, pucks did he block? He was like Chris Tanev, right? I mean, the guy played through a lot, and he's gonna be in the Ring of Honor for sure. And I wish him well. Down in LA, yeah. I hope he has success there. He's one of those guys that it's weird because he's so quiet.
Yep.
And that was part of it, right? Like, he never spoke. Even the Sedins, who were soft-spoken people, they had to speak to the media a lot. Well, Henrik was the captain, so he spoke a lot. But Alex Edler was kind of like, I mean, I've interviewed Edler a few times, and it's like one of those conversations you have with a guy, and you're like, all right, I tried. Take care, Alex.
Speaking of interviewing Canucks defensemen, that's what we're going to do next on the Halford and Brough Show. Coming up at 8 o'clock, the newest member of that Canucks blue line, Tucker Poolman, joins us live right here, your home of the Canucks, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650.